Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Welcome back. Moolala Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. It is never too late to start building your financial future, even if you don't have a lot to start with, even if you have made some mistakes. But certainly women face their own and sometimes different challenges than men when it comes to getting a handle on their money. Author and personal finance expert Kelly Keene has written a new book packed with stories and tools and tips and ideas to help women feel more confident about their money. She joins us now from Edmonton to talk about Rich Girl, Poor Girl, Save Better, Invest Smarter, and Earn Financial Freedom. Hello there, Kelly.
Mr. Bruce Sellery, always great to be with you.
Lovely to talk to you. You've written, I don't know, is it 18 books, 25, 105?
This is what happens when you have no life. You just write.
Well, thank you on behalf of Canadians. What, this is a serious question, what was left to be said? Because you focused on the gender dynamic before in two of your books. What was left to be said?
You know, that is a very good point. I think there was a lot of lessons from COVID, although my last book did have a COVID update. Shockingly enough, there was. And here's why. Because Simon & Schuster really pushed me with the last book and this book to write in a story format. And it was challenging, but I have to say my readers really enjoyed it. Instead of my, you know, like my previous books were very matter of fact and here are the facts and here's the lessons. They tell me that it, you know, really helped for them to glean how to make important decisions, how these characters, you know, had missteps like cohabitating and then, you know, having a freeloader there. And how do you get rid of that person who now has a stake of a claim on your equity and navigating divorce and aging parents. So maybe it wasn't that it still needed to be said, but said in a way that might resonate, hopefully continues to with my new readers.
You and I have been covering this space for a very long time. We are not new to this. How would you characterize your audience, in this case, women? How would you characterize this audience today versus 10 years ago? How are they different? Where has progress been made, if any?
That is such a good question. I would love to say that it is a totally different audience, that it is an audience that is eager and ready and, you know, wanting to grab the reins of financial freedom, but it's not. It's not. And actually, it was, Bruce, incredibly disheartening to go through a lot of the studies and surveys that still today, all of the inroads that women have made, you know, I couldn't even be talking to you maybe 50 years ago, certainly 100 years ago. And almost the entire time I wrote this book, I had a picture of my grandmother who passed away on my third birthday, so I never really met her, to really galvanize the point and to remind myself that it was just a couple of generations ago. She could not own property in her name. She could not make a decision without her husband. There was nothing that she could do other than have the 13, 14 children that she had. You know, and so I really wanted that to come through as well. That look, women, you know, enough of the placating, enough of the, oh, you don't find finance interesting. You just don't have the time for it. I get it. I know you're busy. I know women have had an unfair ride during COVID. But money is like oxygen, and you cannot let anyone else control that supply. And just if you can hear my passion here, Bruce, I need you to understand that the research shows that over 60% of millennial women are deferring to their spouse on matters of money. And 41% of female breadwinners, these are breadwinners, are deferring to their spouse on matters of money. So it's kind of like, ladies, this is not okay.
Yeah.
It's got to change.
Yeah. Well, I love your passion, of course. I also loved how story-oriented this book is and the flow of it. So you first pages, you meet a young woman named Max. She has a job. She has an education. She's overspent. She didn't know what things cost. One of the missteps you highlight is that she waited too long to move back home, which is a controversial move. How does one know when it is time to make a major change like that?
Well, that's a good question. And you as the CEO of Credit Canada would know very well that as soon as you start losing some sleep at night, as soon as you are paying, credit card minimum payments with other credit cards, as soon as there's these red flags and these, you know, really uncomfortable feelings about, my goodness, like, you know, optimism is a great thing, but when it comes to finances unraveling and trying to figure it out on your own, just as we would not self-diagnose and self-medicate and look for a soundbite of what our neighbor is taking as a prescription, nor would we want to do the same when it comes to our finances. And that is where I wish Mac would have reached out to one of your credit counselors and said, look, things are falling apart. What do I do? What are my options? And if that shame and embarrassment and guilt would have been taken away early on to say, hey, this might not be the best, but if you moved home, you could save your credit score tanking. You could save all of this debt. But she navigated alone, unfortunately. And then, you know, that chapter reveals her missteps.
You have something that you call a 30-day anti-budget, which I love because neither you nor I love traditional budgeting. So take us through the five steps of this anti-budget.
Yeah. And I love your message, Bruce, of like, what do you want your money to be there for? And even though I don't talk about that in the book, I think it's really important. So I don't think budgets work. I think they're like diets. I think for the people that they work for, great. You can just tune out for a minute or two.
Yes.
Keep doing what you're doing. But for those of us that find it too restrictive, and in fact, a lot of studies reveal that when you over-restrict, just as we're seeing with COVID, you get into a scarcity mindset, and then you just get into this mentality of, I'll eat a piece of the pie, and then while I'm at it, why not eat the whole pie? And things unravel really quickly. So it's an exercise in behavior change. First and foremost, in the old days when I first was talking about this, I'd say go to the dollar store, get a little book and a pen, and just track all of your spending. So that exercise in and of itself, people report, wow, they're just much more aware of where their money's going. Like you say, you know, what is your money for? And are you actually spending it in the way that you want to? Now, for most people, that is just too much work.
Yeah.
But if you bank with one bank, use one credit card, one debit card, they're going to do most of that heavy lifting of the tracking for you. So that's great. I still want you to dig in more. Like, what are you paying for your car and auto insurance and all that type of stuff, right? So you're just figuring out, where does your money go? Now, number two is you're figuring out, okay, what are the categories for you and your family? Is it Uber Eats? Is it subscriptions? Like, whatever it is during COVID, I certainly can put my hand up. My husband and I oversubscribed to everything at the beginning of COVID. And it was a lot of work to rein that back and even figure out how to cancel that. So you're going to look at, it's not about sacrifice. It's about choice and awareness. Are you aware of where your money's going? So once you see it monthly, you multiply it by 12 and you see, holy moly. Okay, that $5 a day thingy turned into a lot, and I'm not even enjoying it or using it. And then you just figure out, okay, so where can that extra money go? Can it go to paying down debt? Can it go to your RSP top up, a vacation when we can travel again? You get the idea of it. It's that, you know, I don't want to budget every day. I don't want to count all my financial calories, but twice a year, I make my husband and I sit down and we do this exercise.
Now, there are pitfalls in relationships. You referenced your husband. You dedicated the book in part to Wyatt.
You did.
For that. Misstep number one, you say here, is moving in with someone without an agreement. I love this in theory. Is this practical, or is this like you're telling me to drink 8 glasses of water a day? Because I may say I will. I am never going to do that.
I hear you. I hear you. That's, I drink my 8 glasses, but I put vitamin C packs in them to make them more palatable.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. I get it that a lot of times we're just making these moves, and especially with COVID, it makes sense. You're dating. Why not move in, save all this money? The problem is if one of you has equity and the other doesn't, sometimes too, until you move in or you go on a vacation for 3 weeks, you don't really know that person as well as you think you do. This character had a freeloader. and you know, all of a sudden it was like, okay, time just kept ticking on. And then because they were in the province of BC, there were rights to her equity from her partner. So I guess it's just being aware that, is that even a possibility? And a lot of people, I just don't think they think that. They think, well, they're kind of like a renter. I really don't intend on staying with them. I'm saving some money right now. So I guess the moral of the story is you need to at least be aware of when you might be entering into a legal agreement, even when you're not taking the commitment of getting married to the person. You're like, oh no, I want to marry this person, but I'll live with them.
Yeah.
You know, could that come, could that bite you in the butt later on?
And that even could be beneficial to decide you're not going to have the agreement, but at least you've talked about it. At least you've had the conversation.
Exactly. And you know what? You can always get that agreement later. It can be more difficult to get later, but there are things called postnups. There are people that create a cohabitation agreement later on. But that probably speaks to maybe some underlying issues in the relationship that, it's going to unravel anyway, unfortunately.
Love. Almost as complex as money. Kelly, thank you so much.
Bruce, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you. Kelly Keene, author of Rich Girl, Poor Girl, Save Better, Invest Smarter, and Earn Financial Freedom. She was in Edmonton.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.